I'd like to call our October 3rd, 2023 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Good evening and thank you all for joining us tonight. Ms. Acona, may I please have a roll call?
Commissioner Clark?
Present.
Commissioner Nichols?
Here.
Commissioner Posey?
Here.
Commissioner Zielinski? Here. Vice Chair Sturman?
Here.
Chair Harrington?
Here.
And Commissioner Outlaw Ryan is excused.
Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right. Thank you all for joining us this evening. We do have blue carts in the back of the in the area here. Bathrooms out to the right. And thank you for joining us. If you wish to speak during call to audience in the back of the room, there's the blue carts in the back of the room. Please fill those out fully and thoroughly. Please tell us, let us know what you plan on talking about or be specific. Tonight, agenda is going to have two study sessions, items for the commission, reviewing and discussion. The public hearing for these items will be held in future time. Open call to audience. At this time, any members of the public is allowed to address the commission at any for any issue listed in today's agenda. Pursuant to Arizona law, open meetings law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matters, ask the matters be placed on future agenda, or respond to criticisms by made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. In order to speak during call to audience, please specify what you wish to discuss and complete it on the blue card. Ms. Konome, do we have any blue cards?
Not for call to audience.
Okay, I would now like to close call to audience.
Mr. Chair, we do have a blue card for item three, but I think you stated earlier you're not taking cards for items two and three. We'll do that at a future date. Is that true?
Yes.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay. There's no future date planned, but there will be coming up here soon.
Excuse me, if I may, Chair, if it's helpful. We're looking at first meeting in December for a public hearing date, and we'll send out notices as well as put ads in the paper and the like. If you could leave us some information, we'll contact you directly. Happy to. So we've got your blue card. We'll get a hold of you and give you a specific date. So, all righty.
Thank you. Ms. Okono, will you please read agenda item number one? I'm sorry. But before we do that, let's go ahead and go to our council member, Vice Mayor Baird.
Thank you. It's good to see you all tonight. We've had some recent planning-related cases. We approved the drive-through smoothie that's in the shopping center along Lambert and La Cañada with a few conditions to help make it more palatable to the surrounding restaurants. And we also approved the annexation of the parcel that is just to the southwest of La Cañada and Moore in the roundabout there. And so it's anticipated that that will come through for a rezoning in the future is what we heard. But the annexation, we just take the translational zoning. So we just took the equivalent to Pima County zoning and made the decision to go ahead and annex that. So that will become permanent 30 days from the council meeting. So we've got our upcoming council things. As you know, we're in the process of working on continuing to work towards our general plan. There's some general plan planning meetings that I think you commissioners have been invited to and are aware of. So thank you for your participation and help with that. And we'd love to have continued public and commission participation there. We're working on planning to celebrate our 50th anniversary. 2024 is the year that Oro Valley has been incorporated for 50 years. And interestingly, it's almost 100 years from the settling of Steam Pump Ranch by some of those families. And so it's kind of a fun time for Oro Valley. So we'll be talking about that at a study session at tomorrow night's council meeting and working on what we're going to be doing for that 50th anniversary celebration. If you have any comments, feel free to email the council. We also have the planning-related items coming up that you have been hearing in your study sessions and that you'll be hearing tonight. Those will come before council after the commission provides us with a recommendation. So thank you all very much.
All right. Ms. Acona, may please have agenda item number one.
Review and approval of the September 5th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes.
Any questions, comments, or concerns about agenda item number one? Do we have a motion on the floor?
I make a motion that we approve the meeting minutes.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries 6-0. Ms. Acona, may I please have agenda item number two?
Study session discussion regarding a proposed zoning code amendment to table 23-1 permitted uses, section 25.1 requirements for specific uses, section 27.7 off-street parking, and chapter 31 definitions to create mobile food unit courts as a conditional use within CN, C1, and C2 commercial zones.
Mr. Packer, you have the floor. Mic's not working.
There we go. That sounds a little better. All righty. Well, again, my name is Kyle Packer. I'm a senior planner here with the town of Oro Valley, and my presentation tonight is regarding a proposed code amendment for mobile food unit court standards. There we go. So I'd like to start with the question of why consider amending the mobile food unit code. We received a pre-application for a food truck court in March of this year, and that image is provided on the right-hand side here. The town currently has no standards for mobile food unit or food truck courts. So back in May, this commission initiated a possible code amendment, and tonight I'm here to discuss a little bit more about what town staff has done in the interim and then gather your feedback on the draft code that we have before you tonight. I'd like to start off just answering the question of what are mobile food units and mobile food unit courts. They're more commonly known as food trucks and food truck courts or food truck parks. However, it is a catch-all term. It includes trailers that have kitchen kind of setups within them, peddler carts, a number of devices that are not exclusively food trucks, but that's certainly the most common way they find their way into communities. Below here are some images from Austin, Texas, Georgia, and some other regions as well. When it comes to the existing code, it only has standards for individual food trucks. It limits their operation to a maximum of 4 hours without a special use or special event permit, and has limits to where they can set up. Also, they're not allowed to have prohibited lighting or signage attached to those vehicles. When it comes to research and how staff formulated the proposed draft code before you tonight, we have reviewed over a dozen municipalities for similar existing codes, as well as studied best practices from the American Planning Association. We also met with City of Tucson planners who are currently drafting their own similar version of a code to address food truck courts, and we discussed the amendment with applicants, those pre-applicants back from March, and received their feedback as we've continued to move forward with this. So moving on to that proposed code, it does retain all standards that are currently within the code for individual food trucks operating throughout the town. However, it also identifies where commercial properties, where this use could be located throughout the town, and sets up new standards for mobile food unit courts and mobile food units operating within those courts. And I'll go into those standards a little bit more when it's time to gather some feedback on that. When it comes to possible mobile food unit court locations, this image shows the areas where that could most likely occur. And that is, this is really just showing the CN, C1, C2, and equivalent PAD zonings. The impact of a food truck court has been estimated to be pretty comparable to just multiple small restaurants operating in an area. A good example is the southwest corner of Lambert and La Cañada. We've got several restaurants operating within a rather small plaza there. I want to be clear, a mobile food unit court, in addition to having only being a use capable within those commercial zones, also requires a conditional use permit. So just to remind the audience and staff, or pardon me, commission members, it does go through a process where staff reviews the project for code compliance. The Planning and Zoning Commission provides a recommendation, and the Town Council provides an ultimate decision on whether a conditional use permit is granted or denied for a particular project. So again, the areas in red here show where this use could be possible. Now, when it comes to general plan compliance, I've highlighted a few policies here that stand out as particularly relevant. Really, this amendment focuses on developing a diversified and robust economic base, promoting the creation of unique community gathering places, and providing for diverse land uses. Now, this is really the time where we're turning it over to you to help us get a little bit of feedback from what you've seen within your packets as far as any concerns, questions, comments you have on that proposed, that draft code amendment before you tonight. So again, if we'd like, we can start with just the definition of mobile food unit courts and see if there are any kind of questions, again, anything on that particular topic, and then we'll move through the other elements here.
Right. Vice Chair Sherman?
Yes, thank you. Well, one of the things I wanted to inquire about is when I was reading the packet that you gave us, mm-hmm. is that there is supposedly a grounds manager, mm-hmm. you know, in place. So are you indicating that the land would be purchased by one person and then he would lease out the spots for food trucks? I mean, is that kind of the plan?
Chair Harrington, Vice Chair Sturman, that is correct. What we've seen, especially with our initial application that came back in March, is that kind of a use where one developer or applicant will come in and purchase the entire property, make improvements to allow independent food truck operators to park and operate for various periods of time upon the property.
Yes, I know there was a four-hour limit. Is there a reason for 4 hours?
So that is the current standard for, Chair Harrington, Vice Chair Sturman, that is the current standard for individual food trucks operating throughout the town. I think that standard primarily exists to ensure that a food truck doesn't stay for 3 or 4 days, weeks, months on a private property or a property that meets the standards that they're allowed to otherwise be at, to ensure that they're not kind of overstaying their welcome on any particular property or providing some kind of nuisance.
The other question I had, I noticed your examples there. You had string lights. So is that going to be allowed, with the kind of setup that was shown here?
That's a good question. I'll go back to some of those slides. And you can see this is one of the reasons we've specifically called out within the draft code that string lights be prohibited unless they're shielded. There are shielded forms of string lights that have significantly less light trespass. And that was one of the concerns raised by our internal team, is we know that a lot of you know, kind of string lights typically are pretty visible off property. And so as seen here, we're going to be moving away from this kind of image. It's a very common element within food truck courts. And so trying to get ahead of that expectation while still allowing for, again, shielded versions of these to exist.
Going back to 4 hours, now are you talking a set time for each mobile unit? Like some people serve tacos, but they like to serve them at night. And then other people have ice cream and they want to serve that during the day as mm-hmm. such. So is that going to be segmented like that, or is it just going to be one set time of 4 hours?
Chair Harrington, Vice Chair Sturman, let me, I definitely realize I've forgotten to kind of address one of the elements. Those standards, that 4 hour limitation applies only to individual food trucks operating outside of these mobile food truck courts. With this draft code, the food trucks would not be limited. They would basically be meeting all landscaping, setback, screening standards for the use, and therefore would really be looked at more almost as a kind of permanent restaurant in that effect. The pads that they park upon are going to be providing a lot of those kind of expectations and meeting those code requirements. And so there will not be a 4 hour time limit. They'll be allowed to operate as long as the property owner sets up a lease with them or whatever the terms they negotiate are.
So if they have 4 hours, what where's the upper limit? In other words, like 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night? Has that needs to be defined yet, or is it?
So Chair Harrington, Vice Chair Sturman, those hours of operation are defined within the existing commercial zones. Some of those do have standards for when things close or, you know, have hours limits to the hours of their operation. However, you know, that'll also be partially driven by the market, I suspect. Don't see a whole lot of operation at 11 a.m. or beyond for many of the restaurants in town, and it'll likely function pretty similarly.
What I envisioned was, you know, when I heard about this idea, I mean, I kind of like it, if you will, especially on the bicycle trails that we have. You know, we have a unique system, and I've seen that our bicycle trails is just bicycle trails as such. But if you had a service like that, I mean, that would really be unique. So I would, is there any thought that, you know, that, mm-hmm. that's been given to that?
Yeah, no, that's definitely something we've wanted to lean into. And I think that's part of the opportunity to be using the conditional use permit process, is it allows both commission and town council to negotiate opportunities in that regard, whether it's extending or ensuring certain hours of operation for those these mobile food unit courts as a whole, similarly providing standards for other elements that may come into focus on specific properties.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Commissioner Solinsky.
Yes, thank you. I have a number of concerns, maybe too strong a word, but a number of observations, and I don't know if it's appropriate. To me, they all seem somewhat attached, but maybe they won't. We'll have to delay some of them based on what everybody thinks. One of the things I'm concerned about is that food trucks, by their very nature, are transitory. They're there for 4 or 5 hours. There's a novelty. They're there for certain events or, you know, one day a week or something like that. And this is anything but that. Okay, now what does that mean? Well, first of all, to me, it means that they're going to be in competition with local restaurants by being basically permanent structures and yet don't have a lot of the restrictions that permanent restaurants do. They don't have to abide by the architectural design. We set very high standards. I've learned here in my 6 or 7 months in, you know, with everything that we discuss, is does it meet the architectural standards and the landscaping and, you know, the height of the building, the look of the building, and everything like that. And food trucks are anything but that. But since they're transitory most times, sort of like the ice cream truck guy when I was a kid, that isn't so much of a problem. But if you put them in one location, tie them all down, and they operate for 6, 8, 10 hours a day, that changes, and they become more competitive to these other businesses that I'm not sure the tax structure, so I'll probably, I know these people would have to pay sales tax, but who would pay the same tax that a restaurant would pay? You know, is the town losing something in that respect? That's a big concern to me. So they're sort of in direct competition with some of our valued permanent structures, and I don't know if that's a good idea. So I basically said it all pretty quickly here, but the tax implications, unfair competitions to brick and mortar that have, you know, higher standards to live up to, higher overhead, and these people don't have that. And, you know, we're going to say it in extreme here, but let's say that the trucks are so successful that actually some of the restaurants shut down because they don't have as much business as they once had. Now, that's an exaggeration, of course, but that's the path I'm sort of going down at first here. And I saw a presentation, I forget if it was here or something, where originally these people were talking about music stage and, you know, operation till 10 o'clock at night and things like that. And that isn't mentioned here, and I don't know why. And I don't think I'm dreaming that other thing, but I don't remember where I saw that. If anybody else remembers that same thing, you saw something like mm-hmm. that? Okay. So that's things that we haven't discussed even, or I don't know if that's for a later time, but once you open some of these barn doors, things start rushing in. So, you know, you go from food trucks, you know, from 4 hours to 6 hours to 12 hours every day of the week, competition with other businesses, and then you're going to, you know, present music and concerts and other whatever they're doing. So those are my concerns that I would like to see addressed, you know, as we flesh some of this out. I realize the presentation couldn't possibly anticipate any of the questions we were going to come up with, but that's really the thrust of what I was having concerns about.
All righty. Yeah, absolutely. Chair Harrington, Commissioner Zielinski, I can speak to a few of those. I'll start with that first element of architecture. With you're right, obviously these mobile trucks aren't going to be architecturally similar to buildings. However, that is one concern that staff has had for the site overall. So that is part of this code amendment or proposed code amendment, is really to enable and ensure that the site as a whole is meeting, again, all of the landscaping requirements. All of the commercial pads that these trucks will be parking on must meet the setbacks, any of the standards that buildings are going to be held to, these mobile trucks will be held to as well.
Okay, but again, they don't have the same kind of overhead that a brick and mortar would have. And that some of that brick and mortar overhead is to the fact that they have to have a nice facade, you know, certain things that we've talked about here in other discussions, that adds a lot of costs. And they don't have that cost structure. So I don't know where that fits into this discussion, but it's more of an overview. It's more of a top-level view of, you know, should we do this, or are we just making it as acceptable as possible? Okay.
So, Mr. Packer, mind if I jump in a little bit?
By all means.
There as well. Good observations, Mr. Zielinski. I think this really is a unique use. And I think, you know, the overhead is, the overhead is borne by the overall owner. I think the most analogous in terms of operation is to think of this like an RV park. There's one owner, folks come and go, and one owner pays the overhead, pays for the amenities. There's a requirement for restrooms. There's a requirement for commissaries, landscaping, setbacks, noise abatement, walls. All have to be aesthetically tied together and would be reviewed as part of the, like a normal restaurant is. But this is a unique animal in that, I share your concern when there's a individual food truck. Let's say it shows up by the Home Depot and parks next to McDonald's and camps out there. There is, I agree, there's an unfair advantage. in terms of the cost for bricks and mortar. This isn't quite the same thing in my mind. This is, again, we're asking a site operator to develop a site, almost think of it as its own mini shopping center. Think of Subway down the street by Harvest. There's a row of buildings owned by a shopping center owner who leases those out to different restaurants. Same principle here. Same principle in terms of folks that come and go. There's one operator that bears the maintenance costs. Whether or not that's equal, that's entirely a discussion point. But you know, our main focus in looking at this use is that wanting to make sure that there are high standards, because the expectation would be if we're going to head toward allowing this kind of use, that it it does have the look and feel that folks in Ore Valley expect. And that look and feel, that responsibility is going to be in the site work, in the arrangement, with restrooms, et cetera, and gathering areas and shaded seating, et cetera, et cetera. So it is definitely a unique use. I also wanted to say that even an individual food truck who might show up next to McDonald's, my example, one that shows up outside of a food park, they're required to get a business license in Ore Valley. So they pay taxes, just like a brick-and-mortar restaurant. So so the tax issue is a level playing field, if I may. And then when it comes to some of these may want to have music venues. Some of these may want to have later hours. That was the thinking in making this a conditional use permit across the board, so that the commission and council can custom tailor and decide what is appropriate on a site-by-site basis, because we're going to get different variations of this. And the idea of the standards is to make sure there's at least a bottom floor in terms of standards that have to go in, but then the CUP process allows customization on a site-by-site basis. So hopefully that helps.
Well, it helps, but believe me, your expertise and experience is a lot greater in this area than mine is. But I really have questions whether the tax structure and tax implications are the same. And to me, they're not living up to the same standards architecturally. I mean, you're saying they're going to make the place look good, but it's not going to be the same as what we just saw with the smoothie drive-through. You know, they had a lot of restrictions they had to live up to. And that's not here. And the RV park is similar but different, okay? So I don't know if I can or should prompt a discussion or this versus that of the tax implications, the aesthetic implications, you know, one against the other might get across the point that I'm concerned about. And it's, again, I'm one of six or seven here, so it's just my opinion right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other stuff ought to really be brought to the surface about the possible. If you know where that other article was, it would be interesting to put all those things that were requested into this discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Chair Harrington, Commissioner Zelensky, I will speak to that item in particular. You're right. This one does individually propose a stage. This is, again, a pre-application, so very early in the process is where it exists, and live entertainment is already a separate use, one that I believe, and Mr. Vella, please correct me if I'm wrong, already is a conditional use permit itself. So they would kind of, you know, whether a food truck park or a food truck court was applying without a stage or with a stage with a live music component, either way, it would require a conditional use permit, which enables, again, looking to other recent uses that you've seen, the Tropical Smoothie restaurant, that was a drive-thru use, which is conditional use permit, which gives you an understanding of some of the capacity the commission and town council have to make additional requests or expectations of a property.
But if they thought the music venue was one of the conditions that would help them make them profitable and make this worthwhile, if that isn't included, maybe this all goes away, and maybe the zoning goes away. Maybe the need for it goes away. So I think all those I don't know about the the pre-submission that they did. I'm not sure what the if that should or can be brought into this discussion, but to me it would be revealing everything that they're going towards down the road. Okay. So I don't know.
If I may, Chair, I just want to emphasize that the code discussion before you is for all commercial sites in Ore Valley that are CN, C12, not one, just wanted to emphasize, not one specific site, and doesn't reflect on one single application. So we're trying to, there's a balance of trying to, what are the minimum standards that you want to see in any of these parks throughout the community? What are the minimum threshold standards? And then, and that's what we're proposing before you. And then the second part is that what are elements that are best left relative to a conditional use permit to address on a case-by-case basis, knowing that different applicants may want different things. They're different styles of parks. Some may want music. Some may not want music. Music may work on one site, but it may not work because it's too close to neighbors on another site. The CUP allows you to do that. So just a thought.
We're going to go to Joe, and then we're going to go to Skeet. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. Mr. Packer, could you tell me where do we see food courts in Oro Valley, food trucks in Oro Valley now? Can't recall seeing one.
Yeah, absolutely. Chair Harrington, Commissioner Nichols, there really are primarily food trucks within the town of Oro Valley at special events. You may see them independently operating on their own, after negotiating with property owners, but primarily you will be seeing them at events, car shows, 5Ks, those kind of events in town. So that's part of it is primarily where they're seeing is in organized kind of uses currently.
Sure, I saw them at the 4th of July. So, yeah, okay, I just haven't seen them individually anywhere. So following up on Commissioner Zielinski, I think he did hit on something that kind of was in the back of my mind too, and that's how long these food trucks could stay, say, at one of these locations, right? In an RV park, they could stay for years, right? But you would think in a food court situation, you wouldn't want the tires to go flat, this thing to become a permanent fixture, right? So do any of the other jurisdictions limit the amount of time a transient food truck could stay in a particular food court like this?
Chair Harrington, Commissioner Nichols, none of the code that I saw specifically limited the duration. I suspect that's going to be largely conducted by the property owner, property manager. I think similarly, if they start to see that the vehicles parked on their property or the restaurants, because that's really, the most similar, while the architectural standards aren't identical by any stretch of the imagination, with setbacks, with limits to lighting and signage on these overall properties, it's going to be effectively several small restaurants operating in close proximity. If one of those starts to look shabby, I suspect the property owners will be certainly discussing that with that individual food truck owner. However, there's definitely a capability or a possibility to explore language, possibly regarding mobile food units must be kept in good repair or something. So it's certainly something we will workshop as we move forward.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. I'm not as worried about the appearance of the trucks as Commissioner Zielinski. I think that's part of the charm of going to food trucks is to see different looks and whatever, right? And you're not expecting them to look like tropical smoothie, you're expecting something like that. But I do think Commissioner Zielinski hit on something, and it would be good to consider, how long these things can stay, what their appearance needs to look like, just to make sure that, an owner who wasn't maybe paying attention, didn't allow food trucks to stay for long periods of time and suddenly, you know, be on blocks or something. We wouldn't want that, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chair Harrington.
Thank you, Commissioner Slinsley and Commissioner Nichols. We have Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I was just going to say, I just feel like this would be very advantageous for our tax, for events, especially events, and it will affect our tax base. And you said that it will be, the same tax will be effective on stationary restaurants as it would be on these trucks.
Chair Harrington, Commissioner Posey, I believe that's correct. I can't speak specifically to the, I'm not personally familiar with the full tax structure for food trucks or mobile food units versus restaurants in town. But as Mr. Vella mentioned, again, they've got to register a business license with the town and conduct their business through that business license.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Vella, that he said that, and I appreciate that. You talking about that, and also about health inspections. Would they be treated, you think, the same as on these portable buildings as they would be on stationary restaurants?
Chair Harrington, Commissioner Posey, the standards for mobile food units are set by the state and Pima County health departments, so the town will not be providing any language for the standards that are set for those businesses within the town, they will be held to those pre-existing standards.
Okay, so that's already set then. All right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Packer, I have a few questions myself. Of course, I think food trucks would be a great variety of food in one general area. You can have different snacks and foods and for a meal there. Do you have an idea how many demands or requests for food trucks or that the town's getting or have?
Yeah, absolutely. Chair Harrington, we currently have the one pre-application in. That is what we have received to date. Can't predict demand in the future. Looking to the region, we've certainly seen food trucks or food truck courts grow as a use. Again, that's part of the reason the city of Tucson is doing a very similar code amendment, is to address the kind of proliferation of unregulated or unstandardized parks that they have within their town limits or city limits. And so we're just kind of looking to do almost get ahead of that curve.
If I may add, sorry to jump in there, Chair Harrington, we'd be happy to look up the number of business licenses we've issued for food trucks in general, just so you can get a sense of, you know, how many we do have coming in out of town limits in general. And, you know, I just wanted to really establish that the need for this use wasn't on our radar at all. And so it really just came across our desk with this one application and folks that were interested in doing this. So that's why we're here, is a result of that. It really wasn't staff opining, you know, what do we need in Oro Valley? So, and we're doing our best to be responsive. So, thanks.
I have a few other additional questions. Of course, these are usually typical small business, mom and pop. Is the town actually working or actively working with small businesses to bring them to Oro Valley, which is definitely bringing new foods and vibrance of foods than we already currently have, keeping our funds and tax money base here in Oro Valley should be definitely something that we're looking towards. And of course, having people in Oro Valley going to elsewhere, Marana or Pima County, or even further down in the city of Tucson for food options, it seems like we should be definitely looking to have more small businesses actually in Oro Valley. Are we currently working with small businesses to kind of entice them to come there? Because usually these small businesses, such as these food trucks, they start out in food trucks, but eventually they get a good enough following that they can actually open up a brick and mortar, lease a place, or even buy or build a location. So definitely to get that progression moving forward, I'd like to know if there's any, are we even considering that or have that on our spectrum
thinking of general plan, that should definitely be part of the general plan or ideas for it to entice small businesses, including the small food trucks, to eventually go into one of our vacant shops or buildings that we may have available.
Yeah, Chair Harrington, that's a really excellent point you've raised. Now, I am not within the Economic Development Division, so I don't specifically know what standards for small business or what incentives or opportunities we have specifically available, especially in regards to mobile food units. However, you're right when you speak to the life cycle of food trucks. Very often, again, typically very low overhead, low cost way to start a business, test recipes quickly, and you do frequently see them expand into larger businesses, larger operating spaces, because they can't keep up with demand. So that's certainly an excellent opportunity for the town of Oro Valley moving forward to look further into those kind of economic development opportunities.
Okay, just got a few more additional questions here for you. Thinking of time frame, that's been brought up quite a bit here. Thinking of these food trucks being at this one particular site for a long extended time frame, I'm guessing that they would leave their food truck at this location, go to a regular job, and then do this like in the evenings, or possibly this may be their full-time job. Is there a consideration or a plan that maybe these are all on pads instead of on just rocks or dirt or something like that? Mm-hmm. So that way there it's more aesthetically appealing as you're going up to the food trucks. If this is considered to move forward, that it looks better than just every other dirt and rocks and things like that. That way it's more appealing, because it looks like this one here is nice, planned out, lots of parking, and it maybe have music, venue, garden, things like that. But of course, I think the appeal to it will it would entice more people that it's much cleaner, nicer, much more upscale as we consider Oro Valley to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Chair Harrington, I can speak certainly to the standards that town staff have drafted into this code or this proposed code. That's an excellent question, because it really does address what we have required of these mobile food units within these food truck courts. They must be parked on improved pads, so concrete, asphalt. They've got to have potable water and electricity hookups for each food truck, mobile food unit site or parking pad. So they're not allowed to operate generators within these parks. So that one of those big noise and kind of pollution concerns is definitely something that City of Tucson has also been addressing. And within those, you know, providing for those pads, those operating spaces for these vehicles to be parked on, they've also got to be accessible. So there's got to be sidewalk. It can't just be a gravel, a gravel area or some kind of turf or situation makes sense for maybe the seating areas or the overall kind of park experience. It's certainly not the primary way that you're, you know, where these trucks are parking, where these trucks are, serving from.
From your own words, so if we decide to go this way, it would have water, sewer, trash, and power, which would bring more consistency of power, food, water, cleanliness, meaning the health department, wash of hands, and lavatories that a normal food truck wouldn't have access to at that location. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, Chair Harrington, correct. Looking at an individual food truck operating by itself individually in a community, they're typically running on generators, either gas, diesel, or an inverter form. They're maintaining all of their trash or grease and wastewaters within their unit, and when that unit is full, their duties to return to their commissary to offload those kind of things, prepare their sanitary utensils, prepare more food, etc. That's part of the reason one of the standards for our mobile food unit courts within the town of Oro Valley would be to have a commissary where they can have access to a number of those things just beyond potable water and electricity at their stations. They've got an area where they can safely dispose of grease as well as other elements.
Now, the site that we're looking at here, could you tell a little bit about the site here and what's generally around that area if we are not familiar with the location, what we're talking about?
I can speak briefly to that, Chair Harrington, but I would, again, remind the commission that this is one site that we've seen a proposal for. There are many across the town that are not obviously similarly represented. This site, however, is a good example, obviously, of where a mobile food unit court may go, because it is the one property that we've received an application for. It's immediately south of the bike trail, within a shopping plaza that has a few other uses. This is the largest parcel within that kind of commercial plaza, really, so that the applicant could get that large park experience. I believe this is just shy of 3 acres. I think it's 2.5 or so. The west side of the property here, and I'll circle it, this is actually existing paving and parking that is kind of serves as a trailhead to the community bike trail there. So that's likely, again, can't predict where these uses would be proposed by other applicants, but that may be a common theme, is access to more walkable, bikeable infrastructure within the town, just to kind of create that community gathering space that these uses tend to trend towards.
So on the other side of this here would be actually the CDO wash, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Just want to make sure it's clear. Any other commissioners with
it? Thank you, Chair Harrington. A couple of comments to your comments, actually, Chair Harrington. We do have a story of a food truck moving into brick and mortar Fork and Fire, which is at the marketplace. They were once upon a time a food truck, and I think they still operate their food truck. So definitely possibility, and I certainly think more competition, the better, it makes our town better, I think, with competition. But and just another comment, so this is something I think that Oro Valley could definitely, we need, it just presents that opportunity to gather. I have 4 sons. I would love to have a place like this to go out, especially as we're coming into the fall and the springtime. We love take advantage of that beautiful Arizona weather, to come out and enjoy a night out. And, you know, if I want Chinese food, awesome. And somebody else can have something. We're all right there in the same place. So I'm excited about this. I think a lot of the town proposed amendments to the code are great, and it will definitely keep to Oro Valley standards.
Thank you very much.
All right. Any other commissioners had any questions or comments?
I'd like to do a follow-up. Commissioner Solinsky. Do a follow-up, please. The humorous side of me, I hope it's humorous, sort of finds a oxymoron in mobile food unit court. They're no longer mobile. They're fixed. Okay. One of the beauties of food trucks, in my experience, has been that they show up at events, like when we have art fairs. They show up at the 4th of July, as someone mentioned, various things like that. And so they're unique, they're transitory, they're, you know, special, if you will. You're in that mode to have whatever, outdoor party food or whatever it is. Another thing that I saw up in Phoenix, I worked there for a few years recently while maintaining my household here, they would come around to the factories and the office complexes. And I don't know if that's done here or not, but that's something that is good for both the workers, for the food trucks, and for the companies, and gives people some variety. They oftentimes rotate it. One would come one day because you have to be fast, you know, but that worked very well. Those, to me, are typical food truck uses. Again, this, to me, seems like a way to... And I appreciate the fact, yes, they are unique. Some of them are quite interesting in design. But what I was saying with the architecture is they don't have to have the same overhead and standards as a brick and mortar does. That's all. So it's a lot easier to paint or wrap a truck than it is to do all the things we expect of the other businesses. So that's one thing that concerns me. The other thing is, to me, this looks like a backdoor way. And I know we're going to cover it more, but they're talking about a beer garden, playground area. You know, one thing I saw was they want to be open till 10 or 11 at night, and that's fine if that's what we want to do as a community, if we find that acceptable. The idea of it being around a bike path, I don't know if there's enough business on a bike path to be viable, whereas they put a beer garden and a playground in, yes, they would get a lot more business that way. So I'm trying to give both, I'm playing a little bit devil's advocate, giving things that I think are good points, things that I think are bad points. But we have to be, I think we have to be careful. That's all.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Harrington, Commissioner Zielinski, for the comments.
All right. Any additional comments? All right. Ms. Acona, may I have agenda item number 3?
Study session, presentation, and discussion regarding a potential town code amendment to allow the keeping of small of animals for food production and animal husbandry purposes on residentially zoned properties greater than 20,000 square feet.
Looks like we have Mrs. Chavez.
Yes.
Welcome. Hello. You have the floor.
Yeah, thank you so much. We are pulling up the presentation. Perfect. Thank you. So I'm Alex Chavez. I'm a planner with the Town of Oro Valley, and I'm presenting tonight's agenda item. This evening's for discussion and feedback. Feedback from commission will help us draft the code language, which for the code amendment, which will also have a study session with town council as well, and then have a public hearing later in the year. So just to put in framework, animal husbandry, if we're not all aware, is the practice of raising livestock or small animals for companionship and food production purposes. So the code amendment that we have, it stems from a constituent's request that we had to the commission back in May. The resident was asking to have chickens in their backyard, and so staff was initiated to explore this potential code amendment, and so we did some research here, and we really are looking at taking a conservative approach to implementing this new land use and this new permitted use, and looking at what makes sense for Oro Valley's and values and characteristics. And so we're looking really at allowing, providing new allowances for small animals on residential properties. And to help us guide our code amendment process, we're looking for feedback on the topics that we have here in front of us, kind of like the puzzle pieces to help us build this bigger picture. And I'll go through these and our findings in the next couple slides. So some background, currently livestock and small animals are permitted for farm and ranch uses on lot sizes with a minimum lot size of 144,000 square feet. Put that in perspective, that's 3.3 acres. Put that in perspective, it's about a little more than 3 baseball fields. It's pretty big. Farm and ranch uses are really stemming more from a commercial purpose, more than raising some chickens for eggs in your backyard, right? So thinking of that. Our zoning code has not been updated in over 20 years with regards to keeping animals. Putting that in perspective with our peers and other jurisdictions, allowing animals for food production purposes has already been implemented, and it's a growing trend as well to evolve with the community's needs or residents' needs to produce food in their backyard. And so we looked at our peers in over 20 jurisdictions, Marana, Tucson, Pima County. We went up north to Flagstaff, Mesa. We even looked beyond to Placer County in California, Brighton, Colorado, just to get a better perspective as to best practices. We also looked at professional resources like the CDC, Department of Agriculture, and we even reached out to the Southern Arizona Beekeepers Organization to get a better idea of what makes sense for animals. And so what we really found is it's a wide variety in the standards, from what types of animals are permitted to the classification of what's small and what's large, the requirements, and even the approval process. If it's a permitted right, if it's a conditional use, or if Planning and Zoning Commission approved it. So quite a gambit with us to be able to kind of find this and create a conservative approach to how we would tackle this code amendment. So here we have a snapshot of our existing code standards. So what you'll see here is we have our zoning districts in the first column. The minimum property size to qualify for that zoning district, and then if farm and ranch is a permitted or conditional use. And you can see that R1-144 is the only district that has keeping livestock and small animal as a permitted use by right. All of the other zoning districts, from our smallest to our largest, requires a conditional use. In terms of the limiting the number of animals, we have a land we have a ratio of one livestock animal per 30,000 square feet. So you're really constrained and limited by the size of your property and kind of working your math through that. There are currently no limits for small animals, however, so that's not defined in our zoning code. For those that are, for the zoning districts that have a conditional use, the conditions for the conditional use permit would establish those limits. And so we're looking to establish those, what a small animal is, what the limits are, and then also identify what's the appropriate property size as our minimum threshold. So, we, again, looked at the different jurisdictions and what works. And so, again, to have a small type of animal like chickens or rabbits, ducks, it's only for commercial and ranch uses. So there's that disconnect of just trying to keep something on a smaller scale. And the majority of our neighbors allow small animals. And we can see that here in the chart. So the animal types that are permitted, what's commonly permitted by our peers. We picked 10 of our most comparable to Oro Valley. And so we have what we're proposing as the definition of a small animal type. And so what this does is allows us to sharpen our zoning code. It allows us to have clarification in what's permitted and what's not allowed, which in turn helps us to enforce the code more cohesively and also allows us to meet that need for residents to produce food or keep animals on or different types of animal on a more manageable and comparable size lot. So again, we're looking at, now that we looked at what types of small animals are allowed, looking at what that limit is for the number of animals. So again, we looked at our neighbors, about 10 of them, and looked at what's the limits look like for a lot that size 20,000 square feet. And so you can see there's a wide variety. Flagstaff allows 10 chickens, Marana 20, Tucson 36, Placer in Golden, Colorado, they have a set cap of 6. So no matter your property size, it's always 6, while the other jurisdictions have an incremental increase depending on the size of the lot. So changing to are proposed, or what we're thinking. In this table, we have in orange what's currently allowed and what we're proposing. So we're looking at maintaining the same level, the same limits for livestock and capping it at 5 to 10, and anything additional over that for the larger lots would need a CUP. Where we're looking at focus and getting feedback is on the limits for small animals. So we're in developing these limits. We thought about a dog, 6 dogs, and 6 chickens. And we picked 6 because our zoning code defines a kennel as 6 or more dogs on a property. So that kind of gives us a benchmark. And then looked at the incremental increases for that depending on the property size, to ensure that there's compatibility with the neighborhood characteristics, being able to maintain setbacks, and provide enough space for the animals. And so we're looking at a minimum of 6 chickens for small animals, and then a goat. So if we're looking at the 20,000 lot size, it would be 6 chickens and a goat. So now that we identified the property types, the limits, it's really looking at what's the appropriate property size. And so, again, what's currently permitted for farm and ranch uses is that 3.3 acres. And we looked at our, we're exploring our properties here in Oro Valley and doing some GIS analysis as to which fall within an HOA, which don't, to understand what properties would be, this code amendment would apply to, understanding that HOA's rules and regulations often prohibit the keeping of animals. And so what you can see here in the table is the minimum lot size by jurisdiction. You can see our neighbors, Marana and Tucson, require a minimum lot size of 1,000. Sarita is 8,000. Mesa, notably, is 35,000 35,000 square feet as a minimum. However, residents could reduce that through a conditional use permit. So, again, understanding what the characteristics are of Oro Valley's values, our neighborhood, and the property sizes here and our setback requirements, we're proposing a pretty conservative approach in setting the minimum at 20,000 square feet for the lot size. So here, this is going to kind of give you some examples as to what the different lot sizes are. And what's notable here is the setbacks or how much space is available to the property from the front, rear, and side property lines. The bottom right-hand corner, that's an example of what's currently permitted to keep livestock and small animals. The item in the graphic in the middle is what we're proposing as a minimum threshold. So property standards, this is really where a lot of the kind of tools, if you will, for jurisdictions to ensure that nuisances are mitigated. So the setback requirements, for us, we have our main building setbacks, which we have on the table. We also have our standards for property maintenance and also animal control. And so understanding that a best practice for code standards to allow animals is utilizing the setback requirements and the existing town code or property management standards and nuisances, our proposed amendment would include keeping animals in the rear of the inside yards, that the coops must be maintained per the setback requirements of that zoning districts, and then that they're also maintained to the existing town standards for property maintenance. And additionally, for the animal, to mitigate any nuisances from odor and noises from the animals, the property owner would be responsible for adhering to animal control, our rules and regulations for that. So another layer of ability to regulate nuisances, jurisdictions utilize stipulations to by animal type. So currently, our code only defines restrictions for prohibiting swine. And so looking at what other jurisdictions are doing, we're proposing that the code language restricts roosters, male fowl, and hogs. And we're also looking at what best practices there are for if bees are permitted. And so that would require a minimum lot size of 1 acre for each hive. Additionally, if we're exploring not just a permitted use, but if we explore conditional use, then we would also explore the processes to revoking those rights and allowances. So conformance with the general plan is a key thread that we use with the code development. So as we're going through and drafting the code language, going through and exploring the standards, it's a keystone element that we're ensuring that we are addressing. So by creating a new allowance for having small farm animals, small animals on a residential property, we're diversifying that land use. So again, we are looking to reduce that kind of scale of what's permitted to allow animals, and not just for ranch uses, but we're really looking at that animal husbandry and looking at that smaller scale to for the residents that are just looking to have a few animals on their lots, and understanding that it needs to have a conservative approach, that we're compatible with Oro Valley's core values and what makes sense for the neighborhood characteristics. And so to help us really hone in and refine that code language, we're looking for the commission's feedback on these items in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez.
Yes.
Oh.
Just one quick question. So if this gets passed, and we discover our neighbor has a rooster, how do we go about reporting that?
Commissioner Harrington. Clark. So it would be the same process that we currently have. It's any nuisances from animal would go through, it would be a determination by Oro Valley Police Department, and then anything further from that, animal control would go through Pima County, which we have an agreement with them to handle.
And if I may, just to add, those two are spot on. A third layer is that a rooster actually, you know, if it's underneath the minimum property size requirements, it would be a zoning violation as well. So it would be citing someone for, just like we'd cite someone for any use that's not permitted. So there are three different layers. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Posey.
Thank you. You had done a wonderful job.
Oh.
you just was very thorough. However, in my opinion is just, I feel like we're opening the can of worms. First of all, I want to just mention the minimum lot size by jurisdiction. These other municipalities, Sayurita, Tucson, Marana, they all are, there's just a lot more land there for such as this. And the policing, thank you, Anna, for, because I was curious how, and I, from experience, that I want to tell you that policing is tough. It's hard to police that. But anyway, in these setbacks that refer to, I didn't, if I miss it, and I'm sorry if I did, but how the setbacks are like from another inhabited dwelling, because I worry about the smell. I worry about the noise, you know, and just want to make sure from these other inhabited dwellings, how far would the setback be from, say, their fence or their house or whatever? Is there some specific?
Yeah. Chair Harrington, Commissioner Posey. So the setback requirements that we're proposing would follow our existing setbacks for main building, and so that would be measured from the distance of the property line. There certainly are jurisdictions that have stipulations to inhabited buildings. So City of Phoenix is one that has, they have their property setbacks, but then what's in addition to keeping animals or chickens in their case is the distance from a neighbor, and that requires written consent from the it's 80 feet, and then I believe, and then written consent from the neighbor if it's anything less than that. So certainly something that's enacted already in other jurisdictions. We thought the property from the distance from our property line fits, given that there are a variety of lot sizes in Oro Valley, which when we looked at that, kind of nixed out some of the smaller lots, like zoning districts such as the R1-7, so 7,000 minimum square feet. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your answers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Nichols.
Yes, thank you, Jay Harrington. Ms. Chavez, could we go to the slide that showed how many animals per lot? There we go. Thanks. So we're proposing 6 chickens and a goat on less than half an acre. That's what we're saying, right?
Correct.
And only in the backyard, so it would be way less than that for the animals.
Back in rear inside the yard.
Okay. And I know that Commissioner Posey brought this up, but what are the nuisance standards for, say, odors and noise?
So, Commissioner Chair Harrington, Commissioner Nichols, so currently the nuisance, the measure of the nuisance for odor and smell, it really defaults to Oro Valley Police Department. If an officer is dispatched to a site, it's at their perception.
Mr. Chair, if I may add, then it goes to the prosecutor, who determines after that if this is a nuisance that an average human being would perceive as a nuisance, and then we would potentially run this into the court if it goes to that. It's not like you can measure particles in the air and say this is too much and that's not enough, but it's kind of the, what do you want to call, the normal average person standard, and that's something that's been in the law for a very long time, longer than me.
Yeah, thank you. I think that sort of sums up what I sense as my colleague's concerns, is that if we're using kind of reasonable standard, that will be tough to enforce, you know, on a consistent basis, right? And so, I mean, I was shocked to see some of these jurisdictions allowing animals on 8,000 square feet. I mean, I don't know if you can fit a house on that, really, you know, let alone have animals. So I think the lot size, I know you're trying to take the conservative approach, but I'm not even sure 20,000 feet is big enough for some of these uses. And I guess I just ask one more question. I presume, but I don't think this will not trump HOA rules, right?
Chair Harrington, Commissioner Nichols, so to your point, correct. Any homeowner association rules and regulations would preempt the zoning code, and so that was part of where we saw that a majority of our properties are in HOAs, and so that really kind of needled through, removed quite a few of the minimum lot size. In regards to impacts of nuisance, we really thought of 6 barking dogs as defined by a kennel, and would that be more impactful than 6 chickens? And so that's where our benchmark came for that. Certainly, tonight's discussion is what would help us guide that, as you saw with the gambit of all of the limits that there are. It can go from 4, like Brighton, Colorado, or Golden, Colorado, all the way to 20 in Marana. So certainly that helps us refine something that meets Oro Valley's needs and expectations.
Yeah, I certainly sympathize with the desire, right? I mean, to have children be able to raise chickens or a small goat or something seems like a good idea. The question is, how do you regulate that? And I know you're trying very hard. I don't oppose the idea. I think lot size and nuisance issues, to the best we can, should be, you know, defined in whatever the city comes up, the town comes up with. Thank you, Ms. Chavez. Thank you, Chair Harrington.
Mr. Chair, may I add one moment of clarification? Ms. Chavez didn't mean to use the wrong word, but preempt is maybe not the best word for HOA rules versus the town. What they are is HOA rules and town regulations run parallel, and in a circumstance like this, the strictest version would be the one that the people would have to follow. It's not like the HOA gets to tell the town what to do any more than the town gets to tell the HOA what to do. It's a fine distinction, but I would hate for us to think that somehow that the HOAs get to tell the town how to regulate, and then we have to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Actors.
Of course, without trying to ducking the biggest issue in the room is obviously the rule. Without any apologies. The rules haven't been changed for 20 years, so it's plausible to say that there's could be quite a few people out there that haven't been following the rules because there's still really an enforcement arm on the smaller lots. Is that plausible?
Chair Harrington, well, we don't track the number of calls that enforcement calls that come in for animal on a property. We do have phone calls that come in from residents that are inquiring what are the allowances for keeping animals such as chickens on their property. If that's the standard of they're doing their good due diligence and being good neighbors and following the process, I think it's fair to say that there's certainly property owners in Oro Valley that didn't go through the same thought process.
And if I may, Chair, I did want to add, because I work more directly with zoning enforcement, and that we do get complaints and. Now, off the top of my head, over the last 5 years, I can think of 5 complaints. And typically, when we get a complaint, it's because someone got an accidental rooster. So you go to the feed store, you ask for a hen, and they're very tough to sext. They're very difficult, and sometimes they get it wrong. Someone gets a rooster, and then we get a call from a neighbor. And then the zoning enforcement path goes from there of, well, I'm sorry, calling that property owner. Maybe your R143, 1 acre lot. Your property is less than 144,000 square feet. Therefore, you need to remove all of your birds. And several of those instances, property owners are very upset because they view these birds as pets. Okay, and then. And then the neighbor who provided the complaint finds out that we're asking them to remove all of the birds. And then I've had folks come in together and say, hey, look, we just wanted the rooster gone. We're fine with the hens. And we have to still persist and ask that all birds be removed because that's what the code says. So we have seen that scenario. Do I think there are folks out there with birds anyway? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's there. So there is a degree of, whether or not it's better to bring these into the light and apply standards or, keep along, our current path. I really don't, will not pretend I have a good gauge of what this community wants relative to this. This is really where we're leaning on you guys. So. Thanks.
Of course, next thoughts would be, the concern would be if some of these livestock animal gets loose, is there far as enforcement? And if let's say a bunch of goats or sheep run loose and run afoul and get out.
Here we go.
I'm just thinking about Oro Valley PD. Having to chase it, is that going to be charged to, sorry, is that going to be Oro Valley's charge, or is that going to be the ownership? Do we have a way of tracking? I know they're not chipped like dogs and cats and things like that. Would there be a way to recoup that charge for Oro Valley's time to go capture this bunch of loose goats or sheep, or what could we charge it back as far as compliance and code enforcement?
So if I may, I think, certainly we'd want, it'd be prudent to have one of those standards that your animals have to stay on site, period. The way zoning enforcement works now is that when we get a report, we first ask for folks to comply voluntarily without going in and writing tickets and fining folks. We give them X number of days to do that. And if that's not taken care of, then we move to that next level. So let's say there are at least several different layers. One, from a zoning enforcement action, we would contact the property owner and say, look, you need to address this now and put your animal away. And if it persists as a problem, then it will be cited to court and associated fines. That's one layer. A second layer is PD, OVPD can get involved based on nuisance. We'd rather not have OVPD spend their time doing that. They have plenty more important things to focus on. So, you know, I would think if the town were to do this, you'd want to set this up as primarily a zoning enforcement issue with backup from OVPD as well as Pima County Health, I mean, animal control. So.
Do we know, have we had a lot of requests for the CUP to change this moving forward, or is it just a few requests to change it?
Chair, honestly, I'm aware of at least three folks that have asked over the last couple of years of, hey, you know, Ware Valley, you're a little bit behind the times compared to adjacent jurisdictions. Can you look into this? And the last person that requested, we said, well, hey, you know, it's not on our priority list in terms of the strategic plan, but you're welcome to go to the commission and council and ask for initiation because we recognize our rules are pretty old could use, even if we wanted to be more restrictive, they could use some updating. So that's why we're here. Someone came before you, asked for initiation, and here we are. Do we get frequent requests for this? No. But it does come up now and again.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Chavez. Ms. Clark?
I was just going to mention, as far as people, or not people, animals getting loose, I think that would really fall under Pima County Animal Control also. So I'd hate to see police officers chasing down a flock of whatever, ducks. Thank you. That was just a comment there. Thank you.
Chair.
Commissioner Posey.
Okay. First of all, I have a border collie, so if any sheep get loose, just let me know. I think very early on in this, you mentioned that you weren't sure what the intersection was of HOA rules overlaid against lots that are 20,000 square feet or more. I think that would be a very interesting number. I don't know how hard that data is to get, but we may be talking 20 or 30 lots here. So that would give us some perspective on, you know, what the risk here is or the opportunity here is. And another thing is that one man's duck is another person's goose is another person's, we didn't mention geese, by the way. I think it's okay to talk with my wife. She's not part of the public, but I was mentioning, you know, one of the agenda things, and she said, ducks, whoa. She grew up in a suburb of Chicago next to a rural area, and they had ducks. You know, you get them from the pet store or whatever. They had to give them to the farmer. Noisy as heck and very aggressive. So ducks are as bad as roosters almost. They don't do it at 5 in the morning, but that's another thing. Another thing, I would not want to have a goat living next, I don't happen to live on that big a lot, but one of my dogs is a border collie, as I mentioned. The other one is a mutt, a rescue dog, and she keeps every coyote in the neighborhood away, and she would not be happy with a goat living next door. And I don't know if there was one of the jurisdictions that had a thing about getting a neighbor's permission, and I don't know if that is something that's really hard to do, because what if somebody moves? But that's something that might be considered in this, is you get the permission of people on both sides, and then if they sell, that's a part of the selling process. But the main one is the first thing. What's the intersection of the number of people we're talking about here? It may not be many. I also don't recommend ducks or geese. But it's very hard to speak against this stuff, because kids are cute. You know, rabbits and ducks are cute. So, you know, it's a hard thing to come across as against, but it comes up against the reality of the area that we live in. So, thank you, Chair.
All right. If nothing further, Commissioner Posey.
Thank you. Just quick question. I was just wondering if they're on your domestic animals, dogs and cats, is there an amount, that a limit to how many of those you can have in a household?
Chair Harrington, Commissioner Posey, the current limit for dogs and cats is 6. Otherwise, it bumps it into a kennel, defined as a kennel, which would have more of a commercial purpose.
Just curious. Thank you.
Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. I just wanted to second what Chairman Zielinski said. It would really be good to see how many properties within the town of Oro Valley are even eligible. So we can get an idea, because there's a lot of people here, but how many really are there?
Thank you.
I think one additional thing that we probably need to consider is where the two lots adjacent to these other lots. So there may be a big, large lot next to smaller lots. And how close would that be effective to other lots or homeowners that may be affected? So as we're looking through how many lots are available, if there's 30 or so that's in the town itself, are they really close to another smaller lot or smaller lots or home division next door, even though the HOA has some say in what can be allowed in there, are they adjacent to this lots where we're going to make it more livestock availability? So that needs to be considered. I know we can't really do it on a case-by-case basis, but I think we do need to add that as a factor, as that, of course, if you're living in a smaller lot and your next-door neighbor has, you know, 30 ducks or chickens or whatever it may be, that can play a factor in your lifestyle or your living ability in that location. I understand because of COVID, a lot of people got chickens and things because of eggs and or just having a self-sufficient or self-reliance on it. But, of course, it may factor in the zoning of that, because if you're next door and they've increased their livestock on their lot, that may affect them, the neighbors next door to them or across the way. So it may be a factor in looking into this moving forward.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. That's an excellent point and something that we can include in our analysis when we're looking at the property sizes the properties that are in HOAs and out. And certainly I think what makes Oro Valley unique is that there are variation in property sizes, and you could have a large lot next to a smaller residential lot and still have zoning setback requirements that are compatible with each other, which I think other jurisdictions really don't have that cohesiveness and nuances to their requirements. And this is feedback that's very helpful for us to refine that and when we're developing the code language.
All right. Is there any other questions, comments? Let's see.
If I may, just to add, we absolutely think the map idea is wonderful. We will definitely have that for you at the next meeting. Actually, we'll send it to you in advance of the meeting so you can take a look-see. And we've done some analysis of that, and it's where you probably would expect lots, and that's really more on the outer perimeter of Oro Valley, not central Oro Valley, not certainly smack in the middle of Rancho Vistoso either. Just think in your mind's eye, you know, the outer areas of Oro Valley in terms of the circumference of the town. And also, we do have other stipulations in zoning code that have expanded setbacks depending on what kind of lot you're next to. So if you're an R17 next to an R144, you know, those setbacks can jump, and we can design code to do that in this case as well. So great ideas.
An additional comment for that, as we're looking to do that on the map, I think we should probably, because we're getting close to build out within a town, so we need to consider on those new lots or those lots that are there that are still available, how would that would affect those lots that are there if we're changing the codes for that, if it's an R1 44 or not. So we need to play that in a factor, and if we can consider that in the map that you bring towards us and the mayor and council as well. That would be great to have something to kind of look at how that may affect other developments that are not yet done. If it's another subdivision or commercial property, that may be a factor in a decision moving forward. Any other questions or comments? All right. Hearing none, let's go ahead and move to a planning update. Do we have a planning update? What's about here?
We do, Chair. All right. In terms of planning update, we have Community Academy, which most of you have experienced. And I think we have at least a member going now. Is that correct? Two? Ah, great. Fantastic. So we start up next week. And what's amazing about this year is that we have well over 50 people signed up. So I don't remember having numbers that high. We've always had high numbers, but we're 50-plus in terms of attendees. So we have a special session planned October 23rd here in Chambers for Commission. I believe you all have been notified by Ms. Ancona, and the aim is to reconsider, at the applicant's request, components of Oro Valley Marketplace with a focus on the central open space area. You might recall there was an area called the Entertainment District, so they are interested in proposing some changes to that, not the other areas where there's development already established in terms of approvals. So that'll be our focus October 23rd, and really appreciate you guys taking the extra time to be here for that. Let's see. We have a neighborhood meeting coming up on November 2nd, and this is a proposed 18-lot subdivision in kind of a odd place. So that's what's left in Oro Valley, right? Odd places in terms of lots. So most of you familiar with the sanctuary at Silver Hawk subdivision? So you get on Ranha, you go to the end of the road, you hit the light at first, and you keep going, that's sanctuary. There's actually a provision going through that subdivision, through the gate, for a road that goes through the wash to a lot back there behind La Posada that's going vertical now. So it's an area that was zoned way back in the day when it was part of the county. So they have hard zoning now. And so folks want to do a small subdivision there. 18 lots. So that proposal is coming forward, and the first neighborhood meeting, again, is 11-2, November 2nd. And certainly that'll be provided on Zoom as an opportunity as well, or in person. Then, 5 days after that, we'll have our regular Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. And our aim is to present the town's first true housing study. Our hope is to get that to you guys well in advance of the meeting. It is very dense. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of data. I find this kind of stuff fascinating. Not only is it based on hard data through the latest census, there are three different versions of public opinion survey included in it. One is based on a phone interview, which is the most statistically valid method and most randomized method you can use, period. And they use cell numbers as well, not just landlines. And they paid attention to not only getting in numbers, but also a demographic spread. Till they hit the statistically valid point. There are two web-based surveys. One web-based survey so that anyone could jump in, any resident could jump in and take the same survey. Less statistically valid, but important in terms of participation. And the findings between those two kind of tracked. They're decently close. A third survey, which is something I don't recall us ever doing, is we surveyed business owners in Oro Valley, as well as employees, including those who might not live here. What's their opinion about housing, housing affordability, housing attainability? And so we're bringing all of those, the fact-based side and also the survey-based side, They aim to be informative. So it'll be a discussion-only item, but there'll be a lot to discuss. And I think some of this information will be foundational for the community use once we really get to work on the general plan and really start rolling up our sleeves and diving into it. So stay tuned on that. All right, last but not least, November 16th is another neighborhood meeting plan for a 31-lot residential subdivision that in an area you've gotten familiar with, the area that was just annexed. They're wishing to rezone. The property owner wishes to do a development similar to what's south of it, semi-custom homes, about 18,000 square feet in size. So that's coming forward in terms of the neighborhood meeting process. So that's our summary, and thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Okay, without further ado, I do have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. We have a first and second. Thank you all. Have a wonderful night.